CinemaJaw is brought to you by The Second City. Love comedy and filmmaking? The Harold Ramis Film School's year-long program at The Second City is for you. Visit ramisfilmschool.com for more info, and we thank them for their support. Listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on Division Street in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and sitting alongside us is the man with kind eyes, our engineer and local filmmaker, Elias Rodriguez.
How's it going, Jawheads?
This week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we cover a topic that we've been bouncing around, finally tackling, and we've been bouncing around for a very long time. Our favorite LGBT films.
Yeah, I think we needed the right guest and definitely got a good one this week. So
yeah, excited. I would actually say an expert.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's what we were waiting for. We really wanted to have someone come on and sort of, you know, be the expert of the show, as we do sometimes when we have special effects or dance movies. We had experts on.
So, yeah, you know, exactly.
Our guest, we should
tailor
mention.
It.
Yeah,
tailor
we
it.
Should mention our guest, Matt.
Fazia Mirza is here. She's an actor, writer, producer, all around great gal. Lots of credits.
Yes.
So excited to talk to her.
Can't wait to talk to her. She has a new movie filming right here in Chicago called Signature Move that we're going to be discussing.
Yeah, so. With Eugene Sun Park.
Yes.
Yeah, who was on way back when. Let's throw it in the jaw box.
Throw it in the jaw box. Kind eyes. When was Eugene on? Get that out for the listeners.
All right.
Besides that, we got a whole lot more.
Yes, we are going eye for an eye on The Boss.
And we have a review of Midnight Special.
Plus, since we're going eye for an eye on The Boss, I thought it would be fun to play some Melissa McCarthy movie trivia. You'll be taking Fazia on in Melissa McCarthy trivia.
You were able to come up with 8-hole questions?
Whew, she's got 8-hole movies, so I was able to stretch it.
Yes. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about Melissa McCarthy. No. She's just, you know, newcomer to
this. She is. Yeah. But I looked, you know, I'm an expert at this point. This is our 275th episode.
Wow.
I'm an expert at writing these trivia questions, Matt.
All right.
And it's interesting, too. I noticed one preview I saw coming for The Huntsman.
That looks good.
It does look pretty good,
it
right?
It does.
And there's been, we saw Cinderella, which was a live action take on the cartoon. And it got me thinking, boy, I would really like to see a Disney cartoon, a classic, that I have in mind turned into a live action movie.
Other than Jungle Book, which they're doing, right.
That's getting ready to come out. That's another great take, right?
Sure.
And I have another perfect one. Have you ever thought of this?
I have, actually. I was just thinking about it after the trailer myself.
Huh. I say for sure. It absolutely has to be.
It's Pinocchio.
Matthew. No, Dumbo.
Pinocchio.
Dumbo, come
Pinocchio.
On. A flying elephant.
A boy who lies and his nose grows.
Cinema War. Ooh, Fazia's going to have her hands full with that one. It is a jam-packed jaw, as always, Matthew.
As always.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest. Fazia Mirza is an actress. She is also getting ready to star in a film that she wrote entitled Signature Move. Very exciting stuff here. Fazia, welcome to CinemaJaw.
Thank you so much. I love that I'm an expert in gayness as much as someone is in dancing and special effects. Like, that is probably the greatest introduction I've ever received. So thank you.
Good. You're welcome.
Well, it's funny because we really had been, me and Matt had bounced around on various topics. I mean, 275 shows, we really have covered a ton of different topics when it comes to movies. And multiple times a film comes up that might have like a gay theme or some, you know, along those lines. And we say, hey, let's cover it. It's about time. But it just so happens maybe the guest that particular week is somebody who's into
sports or something.
Right. And it never matches up. And so like, we'll save it until we finally have a guest that we feel comfortable enough talking about it. Because it's one of those subjects you want to be open about it. And you want to have somebody who, quote unquote, is an expert in the field.
I love that I'm a subject matter expert. I'm going to consult in court cases on it.
There you go.
Well, it should be noted, I guess, to the listeners listening to this, that you are out and about, and you actually promote movies that have these themes in them, and that's sort of the reason why we're joking around calling you an expert, but that is really the reason why.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my mission as an artist is to, you know, create art and create content and, you know, support content as well that, you know, defies the stereotype across race and religion and gender identity and sexual orientation. And, you know, I sort of encompass many of those different identities as a Pakistani Muslim queer woman.
Sure.
Who's also short. You know what I mean? Like, so I feel that it's really important to sort of get the voices out there that aren't heard And how many times have you heard from a Pakistani Muslim lesbian? You know what I'm saying?
This may be a first for me, to be honest.
Right. But we hear from short people all the time.
Tough crowd here, Matthew. Wow. Tough crowd. Amazing.
Crazy hot. Yeah.
I should also note that Fazia is actually drinking out of a mini whiskey bottle. Only two times, we've done this show 275 times, only twice has a guest brought booze in a bottle, both time females.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Powerful.
I wonder what that says. You think women don't trust us to have good booze?
Lushes. They're lushes.
Yeah, it could be that.
We come prepared. We have tampons and mini bottles of bourbon.
What else do you need?
Yeah.
Now, Fazia, I mentioned you actually went to law school before you pursued acting. What made you jump from law school into the world of acting?
Well, I thought being an actor isn't hard enough, so why don't I make it harder? Why don't I be an actor on a lawyer's debt? Because that makes sense, you know. I was into theater and band and speech team and all that stuff when I was younger. And then when it came time to go to college, it was like my parents were like, okay, you know, your hobby is done. Now what are you going to do? And I was like, oh, darn. So I, you know, pursued like an English degree and then I went to law school because they expected, you know, they wanted me to get a higher education. And
so a lot of pressure on you from the folks.
Yeah. And, you know, law school's great. Most people go because they have no idea what else to do with their lives. And it's, you know, it's... You can go with any background to law school. You don't need to, you know, be pre-law. I actually took this class in law school, which everyone has to take. It's called trial advocacy. And trial advocacy is the stuff you see in courtrooms. So it's cross-examinations and direct examinations and learning how to object really well and opening and closing arguments. And I loved it, but I'm like, wait a minute. This is more like being an actor and less like being a lawyer. I love it. That just reminded me, like, this is the thing that inspires me the most. So, you know, I took the bar, I passed. I was a lawyer for a couple years. Don't hold it against me. But I promised myself that I would sort of get into acting and the arts again. So I would, like, lawyer by day and act at night.
Were your parents in the back of your head sort of,
scratching?
Yeah. Was that something that kept you up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was definitely not cool. You know, it's like, What do you want to do? You want to go have zero life and no future and be in debt even when you have this great education. Why? So you can do what with your life? You know, and so I get it. It's just, you know, we come from a different culture and, you know, it's like the typical like immigrant parent story of no, it's time to get married, have kids. That's your job. Go do it. Go make us happy. Go give us something to live for, you know? But I just did it anyway because I thought, this feels good. So.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So as far as coming out, was this something that happened after you started acting or you had already been out with your friends and so forth?
My first woman kiss was a long time ago, but it was, you know, you're at the club.
Right.
You know, you might be having something under the influence.
The Katy Perry experience.
Right. Yeah. You know, but it was also very brief. But to be honest, for me, it wasn't until later. And my dad died like in 2006. And so it was actually after that where, you know, I started going to gay bars and I started really kind of exploring what that meant and having a relationship with somebody. And so I would say it was something that I kissed a girl, but I never thought I was going to keep kissing girls forever. You know, I was like, oh, wait, this really stuck. Cool. All right, fine.
And then it was obviously something that you took with you as far as once you became like a performer, as far as comedian goes, acting. That was just always something then you could sort of latch onto and sort of, I guess, spread the good word. I think by saying it and by joking about it and talking about it, it helps everybody sort of understand it more. Correct?
Totally. I mean, what I realized was if I wanted to be who I am, and who I was trying to be at that moment, I couldn't rely on anybody else's definition of what that meant. So I couldn't rely on, you know, the person I was dating at the time to like teach me how to be a lesbian, right? Whatever that means. Like, oh, right, I wear these kinds of pants and I go to like this kind of like drag show. It's like, well, what does it mean to me? Because my background is so specific. And so I was like, wait a minute, do I have to give up all of my stories and all of who I am and all of where I came from in order to be like a lesbian? And so that was really confusing to me. So I actually started creating, my first short film was an exploration in how do you be all of the things that you want to be at the same time? Is it possible? And then I started realizing, well, part of it is that there's not representation out there. If I couldn't find the role models, even like brown people on television, other than, you know, Apu, You know, I mean, like, seriously, it was like, well, who? And then you're like, no, the guy from Short Circuit. And you're like, no, he wasn't brown. darn it. You know, we were all fooled. So if I was seeking that, then other people were seeking that. And so I was like, well, why don't
I gotta say I love Short Circuit, though.
Oh, who does it?
Yeah, totally great movie.
Yeah, it's like Short Circuit. Awesome, but slightly racist.
Yeah, aside from that one major flaw.
Right. Well, that's like Breakfast at Tiffany's. You're like, oh, what a great movie. Oh, wow, really problematic. Yeah. Why are you called Ching Chong China Man? Why?
You go back in time, and it's amazing, those kind of movies that they just didn't realize, you know? It's crazy.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, and then you have Gods of Egypt, and you're like, huh, that's 2016.
No.
So true. Now, one movie that I saw that I had to absolutely talk about, just because the title of it is hysterical, is a mockumentary that you made entitled The Muslim Trump Documentary, in which you play Donald Trump's fictional Muslim daughter. How'd this project come to be?
Well, Donald Trump himself, he planted the seed, literally. I had a series I did before called Camp Kardashian where I played the long-lost, lesbian Kardashian sister. That was something I did maybe like 5 years ago. So putting in these kind of satirical characters into famous families is something I love. But,
sort of known for that.
Yeah, that's my signature move, if you will.
I like it.
But then, you know, Donald Trump said the thing on, I think it was December 7th, where he's like, all Muslims should be banned and wear armbands for being Muslim. And that was the point where I was like, well, this is really weird. And not even just weird, but this is disgusting and terrible. We should do something. And what can you as an artist do? So I thought, well, I should make something. What was crazy is, you know, I mean, all the comics at the time, they weren't doing that much comedy or satire about Donald because he loved it too much. So he would do it and he'd be like, oh my God, so-and-so made fun of me. Amazing. I'm so famous. Yeah. You know, I'm a megalomaniac.
Yeah, you're just feeding into the...
Feeding the monster.
I still almost wonder if this whole big thing is just a performance art piece on his part.
We hope, but...
I mean, if so, then damn, he's a genius because... He's got everyone fooled. For the record, I am not saying Donald Trump is a genius. If it's a performance art piece.
Take that sound clip out. You know?
Oh, man. Uh-oh. They're going to hold that over my head.
But it was one of those things where it's like, okay, well, what's the kind of comedy that he can't embrace? If his Trump supporters are all about hating on Muslim people and Mexican people and these minority groups, the one kind of person he can't embrace is a Muslim daughter. And the other thing, I was like, well, if Donald were a real person or someone in my life and he was so angry about something, I'd think, well, something bad happened to him or he's really sad. So I'm like, oh, he was in love with a Muslim woman. He had to have been. And he must have had this Muslim daughter. And then, you know, it's really fun to look at someone's actual past and create a backstory for the character. So, you know, why did he build a casino in Atlantic City called the Taj Mahal? For the love of a Muslim woman.
I love it.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, and he's, you know, his divorce papers from Ivana said they're getting divorced because of the other woman, in quotes. Well, that wasn't Marla Maples. That was Aisha Trump's mom, Mariam Ali. You know, so it's really fun to piece that stuff together. And, you know, I think that there's not a lot of Muslim characters who are out there and also Muslim voices using satire as a form of speaking out. So I was like, why don't I just go put on my blonde wig, my Trumpness? And if anything, it's like...
I got to see this. Is it available? I mean, where can people check it out?
It's on the lines. If you go to themuslimtrump.com, there's a link. It's a Vimeo link that you can just watch. It's like a 15-minute mockumentary, but...
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll throw the link
it.
In the show notes too. So
awesome! And love hashtag show notes.
Yeah.
So that brings us up to this project entitled Signature Move, which is very exciting for various reasons. Number one, as we mentioned, Eugene Sun Park is involved, and he had been on Cinema Jaw. Great guy, great filmmaker, very exciting filmmaker, young talent. And two, this film is actually being produced by New City Magazine. And this is their first foray into making a film. And what's really exciting about this is, behind the scenes here is the Chicago Film Project, which is very similar to Project Greenlight in the sense that they are going to document the making of this entire movie. But instead of doing it on a TV show, it will be on a blog, magazine, write-up. Do I have that basically right? Do I got the gist?
You have it totally right. Yeah. So, you know, Brian Hinkelke, who's the co-founder, him and his wife Jan, who run New City Magazine, Project Greenlight. Well, you know, I like to call it Project Brownlight since, you know, I'm the first, we're the first film, which I didn't write myself. I co-wrote with a friend of mine, Lisa Donato, who's one of my creative collaborators. Yeah, they had this great idea of it's our 30th anniversary in 2016. Everybody's talking about indie projects, indie film. Why don't we participate in this? And how do we do it where we make as much of it as possible here? And by that, not just like the filming, but the director and the crew, et cetera, et cetera.
Editing.
And so, you know, we hired a director, Jennifer Reeder, who's amazing. And she's from here. This will be her first feature. Her last shorts have gone to Sundance in Berlin and insert other awesome, crazy Canadian European festival here. It's kind of crazy because we're all kind of doing it for the first time together. So it's a learning process. And I joke with Brian. His kids are all grown up. And I'm like, yeah, your kids are gone, but now you got aphasia. Thank you. I just poke him.
Awesome. So, and just give us like a synopsis on the movie, because it actually does have something to do with your law background, as the character is a lawyer, correct?
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of write what I know. And so everything that I write is definitely inspired by things I've experienced or seen or done. And so its signature move is essentially about a 30-something Pakistani Muslim lesbian named Zainab who's trying
Where did you get that idea?
Already a stretch. I don't even know like who came up with this crazy crap. A Pakistani Muslim lesbian played by me who's trying to find her identity in love and wrestling. You know, the woman Zainab has a couple secrets, and she lives at home, takes care of her mother, who's obsessed with watching television, and she has secrets from her mother. One of them is that she is falling in love with this Mexican woman named Alma, and then the other is that she's taking these wrestling classes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and she's taking them from this former WWE wrestler.
Oh, nice.
And so all of it is definitely inspired by experiences I had in the city. So
what about the wrestling part?
Yeah, not that I'm a wrestler. Although I'm learning, I have to learn how to take a fall right here. I'm just hitting the left side of my ribs. We hired somebody to be my wrestling consultant coach, and he's like, "This is where you gotta take a fall." And I was like, "Ow, what are you doing?"
So you're actually getting in the ring in the movie a bit?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I was on. So the way the wrestling came about was that I was on a late night talk show, comedy talk show, with Jamie Campbell. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah, Jamie's been on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Jamie Campbell, I was on Talk Hard one night as Kim Kardashian, and he had another woman on there, and her name's Lisa Marie Verone, who was Victoria in WWE, and she owns a restaurant here in town. Now she lives in California. But she it wasn't Jamie, but it was whoever the Jamie's, like, you know, sidekick guy was, whose name I'm blanking on, sorry. She's like, "I'm going to do my signature move on you on the show." So the guy lays on the ground. She stands over him. She looks down and she says, "Don't move or I'll get hurt. And I don't want to get hurt." And then she does her signature move called the moonsault and does this like backflip on top of him. And she's, you know, she's this cut, bad, awesome woman, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, these women are, I think, sometimes ignored by like a mainstream. I mean, obviously WWE is a huge following, but I was like thinking about wrestling, like these women are so epic and their lives are devoted to the work they do, both physically, emotionally, they're acting, and they're ignored by such a mainstream audience. And so I thought, well, how do I bring that into this, you know, Pakistani Mexican love story that, you know, I have in my head that I wanted to write, which was inspired by my ex. And don't worry, we're best friends still. And how do you sort of like blend and combine the things that people don't expect to see that are actually happening? But how do you put it all together in one space and tell that story? Part of the story is that the Pakistani community, the Pakistani family has so many similarities with the Mexican family, whether it's food or how their mothers are or, you know, their history and meanings of names and things like that. Then you have this wrestling tradition, the lucha libre wrestling in Mexican culture. So the character Alma, her grandmother was a lucha libre wrestler in Mexico in the, you know, in the 50s or whatever, the women have that connection as well. And it's the city of Chicago, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful place to fall in love, the summer, to showcase it as a character. Yeah, it was just really important to me to tell a story here that felt really authentic in terms of these really strong women and women whose stories I feel like aren't told, even though, you know, in the city of Chicago, two of the largest populations of Latin people and of Mexican people and of South Asian people are in this city. But how often are their stories being told, especially by, you know, New City Magazine,
right?
Right. It's been an adventure.
It's awesome.
That's a trip.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it. I just like that we're going to be able to follow along, you know, with people writing, and Eugene Sun Park's going to write, and other various writers are going to write at New City, and you can sort of follow along. So for the listeners, the jawheads, we call them, listening to this, that want to follow along, get to know more about yourself and the project Signature Move, where's the best place to find more information online?
I'd say the website's probably the best spot, www.signaturemovemovie.com. We also have a Facebook page at the same site. And those two places will take you to Chicago Film Project and everything else. We have a Twitter and Instagram and all those social medias, all the buttons. But yeah, and we also have our DP too. I don't know if you guys know Christopher Rejano. Super awesome guy. He's filmed all of Jennifer Reeder's films. And he works on like Empire, and he did the lead music video that came out of Chirac that Spike Lee did.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really talented guy. So, you know, we're kind of assembling this, you know, cute, I don't know, that's a terrible word, but you know, this just really like powerful, diverse team of storytellers.
Before we let you off the hook real quick, there's one detail in your bio I wanted to ask you about, because I can I can sense that you're sort of embarrassed about
this. Oh, I could already tell she is, yes.
So I think it was 2011.
Bring it up, I love it.
You were named one of Chicago's 50... I hope I'm getting this 50 most beautiful Chicagoans.
I think it was an error. It was
by Chicago Magazine.
yes, that did happen. I knew you were gonna. I don't know what.
Yeah,
there we go. See, we got sound effects on the show.
All right, jawheads, you're welcome.
How did that come to be? I mean, did someone come and interview you? Or?
Yeah, someone came and just sort of like measured my face. And, you know, they were like, all right, this is okay. Is this no filter? Is this your face no filtered? And I was like, yeah.
Hashtag no filter.
No filter. No, you know what? It's one of those things where, you know, someone says, talk to this person. And they said, yeah, okay, let's talk to her. And they like what you're doing and who you are and what you represent. And it's beauty on the inside. That's what it is.
Hey, we're just hoping to make the list. That's really what he's digging for information.
I've been knocking on their door, sending them, you know, goodwill letters, and I get nowhere on the list. So
you know what? We're gonna make our own list. We're gonna call it a 50 most beautiful jawheads.
Rise at the, you're at the top of that list, buddy.
Thank you. At least I made the list, you know.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And also maybe a personal Twitter handle or such if the listeners want to follow along.
Yeah, of course. Mine's The Fawz, T-H-E-F-A-W-Z. And that's basically everything. Instagram, Twitter, and my Facebook page is Fazia Mirza.
Beautiful.
Follow along. We like to end all our guest interviews with some silly cinema cues, we call them. Get to know the guest through the eyes of cinema. Elias, you got a couple in the canon?
Yeah, one of my questions was about how to get us on that list. So.
Damn it. Sorry, Elias.
So second question here. We're going to talk about The Boss today. If you had to have one of these two actors as a boss for a week, who would it be? Michael Douglas from Wall Street or Meryl Streep from The Devil Wears Prada?
I'm going to go with, even though it terrifies me, I'm going to go with Devil Wears Prada just because I'd want to know that kind of fear in front of that kind of beauty and bone structure.
Oh. She was terrifying in that movie.
And it was so, like slight and so slow and deliberate.
Yeah, they're both terrifying.
That's true. Well, you know, maybe I'm biased where I'm like, well, the scary guy yelling, I'm like, well.
That's been done.
Yeah, I'm like, I see him like just walking down Division on a Friday night.
True.
No doubt. Sorry, right. I spoiled your 50 beautiful Chicagoans.
I see three of them in this room right now.
Ah, too sweet. Boy, oh boy. Fazia is going to be hanging out on this entire jaw. She has her top five favorite LGBT movies. We'll see where this goes. I can't wait to see your list, Matthew.
I'm excited to reveal it.
Awesome. Brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye.
Eye for an Eye. Interested or ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
TheMillennialEntrepreneur.com.
Tell me more.
Hey, Rye. Have you ever considered starting a business?
Have I?
You definitely should. The job market sucks, pensions are dead, and a college degree doesn't mean much. We have access to free resources, information, and support from others. Why wouldn't you want to start a business, dude? You know why? Because it's not easy, it's not for everyone, and nothing is guaranteed. But what's life without a little risk? If you're looking for inspiration and raw startup stories, tune in twice a week to the Millennial Entrepreneur Podcast. You'll hear a new story about how somebody got their start in business and turned it into a thriving career. Check them out at themillennialentrepreneur.com, and we thank them for their support.
Eye for an eye, the boss. A titan of industry is sent to prison after she's caught for insider trading. When she emerges ready to rebrand herself as America's latest sweetheart, not everyone she screwed over is so quick to forgive and forget. The film stars Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Bell, Kathy Bates, and Peter Dinklage. The movie is directed by McCarthy's husband, Ben Falcone. It opens everywhere on April 8th. We throw it over to Rye. Interested or ignore?
Boy, you know, I really like Melissa McCarthy when she is more in a supporting role. I think too much McCarthy is not good. And I said this when she had the movie Tammy. It was the same thing. Once it becomes the Melissa McCarthy show, I don't like it. Then again, I gave an ignore to Spy, and I loved Spy, but I still got to go with my gut feeling. I'm ignoring this one.
I think Melissa McCarthy is sort of on the Star Trek cadence. Like, every other picture is garbage. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be Ghostbusters that's garbage. And this one looks like it might be the good one. So, interested.
Fazia. Wow. One interested, one ignore. Break the tie.
All right. This is what I do in life. I'm going to say that it's the kind of movie that I love. I do love Melissa McCarthy. I think she's a powerful, non-conforming woman. She sort of defies a stereotype in many ways. And I would love to watch this movie on a plane. Interested. Right. On a plane.
that's an category, asterisk. Yeah.
Elias, I think we saw the Tammy train wreck together. What do you got here?
I want some Tammy redemption. I'm gonna go. No, I'm not. I'm gonna go ignore. I think it's gonna be her husband's gonna be responsible for this. I think he's going with the hackier jokes. It seems like with the trailer and then Tammy. Although I do like the look of her in the trailer. It's kind of a funny angle, but it might get exhausting.
Two interesteds, one ignore. But one of the interesteds is interested on an airplane. Should be noted. Jawheads, if you're interested in checking it out and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it, get the discussion going. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I recently went into a dark theater with no sunlight present, put on my blue goggles, and checked out the new film, Midnight Special.
What do you know about Altenmeyer?
He would have fits.
Things would break. Cars would shut down, that kind of thing.
Others have described seeing things. Did he show you things?
Yes.
What kinds of things?
I wouldn't know where to start.
We need to know where he is.
You all have no clue what you're dealing with, do you?
If you are not familiar with the name Jeff Nichols, you should be. He is one of the most exciting young filmmakers working today. His three previous movies, Shotgun Stories, Take Shelter, and Mud, are all fantastic, with Take Shelter being one of the very best films I've seen in the past 10 years. In a time when it seems Hollywood force-feeds us and has every movie explain itself to the T, Nichols goes in the opposite direction with Midnight Special. The film opens with Alton, a young boy accompanied by his father, Roy, played by Michael Shannon, and his father's friend, Lucas, played by Joel Edgerton. There is something special about Alton. That is evident right away. They are on the run from a religious cult that look at Alton as the chosen one of sorts. However, they are not the only ones trying to find Alton. The U.S. government wants to find the child as well to question him on how he is able to learn top-secret information. This chase sees Alton's group driving at high speeds with the lights off using night vision to see. They must meet up with Alton's mother, played by Kirsten Dunst, before ultimately making it to a set destination that Alton has already the coordinates to. What will happen there? No one is really sure. not the characters, and not the viewers. The film works as a sci-fi chase film, but it is also open to interpretation. There are clearly themes of parents caring for their children, no matter the cost, plus themes of faith, and my favorite theme of all, the fantastic. Jeff Nichols went for it, and I applaud his effort. The ending of this film may confuse or divide moviegoers. I myself found it awe-inspiring. With all Nichols films, you can expect awesome cinematography and a beautiful score. And oh, that score by David Wingo is extremely moving in the final third part of the movie. I am a fan of Midnight Special, and I think I'll like it even more the second time I see it. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a solid 3 Jaws.
This isn't getting a lot of marketing out there.
It's a smaller movie, you know? And yeah. I think that's why it's important podcasts such as this tackle these movies. This is what I really push for, you know? To go out and see something a little bit different than what we're getting.
Yeah.
Obviously, movies that we just want eye for an eye on, like The Boss or Batman vs. Superman, have hundreds of millions of dollars at their disposal for marketing, for production. A movie like this, I mean, they're trying to get the word out heavy. There were 3 pre-screenings here in Chicago. Being a critic and seeing a lot of these movies, you know, beforehand, that's usually not the case. There's usually you can make it once and that's not. For them to give you 3 is meaning they want everybody to see this movie and get out on your shows and talk about it as much as you
can. Yeah, you would think, though, with this filmmaker's track record, he would be getting bigger pushes.
You hear that, but then you got also like a guy like Charlie Kaufman, who just made
Anomalisa,
who, when I was at the screening, he actually said he had trouble finding funding for the movie. This is a genius, a clear-cut genius, and no one's giving him money to make his movies either. So
that's crazy. Charlie, call me up. I'll back you on Kickstarter.
It really does happen, but I mean, Nichols, I think, is getting the cast now. I think he's more or less starting to get that feeling of like, all right, hey, people are willing to work for a little bit less money to be in one of his films because they believe in the project. So I think it's going in the right direction. And this, I think, when looking at it, special effects-wise, one of my pros that I wanted to hit on, I might as well hit on it here, is the sound design. He obviously doesn't have a lot of special effects scenes, but when they do happen, not giving anything away, at one point, a satellite crashes from the sky and these little fireballs are coming down. It is loud and scary in the theater. And I thought, wow, you can see he's got a little bit more money than he's had in his previous efforts, which is went to good use.
How is Kirsten Dunst?
Very, very, very good. In fact, the 3 leads, adults.
You didn't like her in Melancholia.
I didn't.
Yeah.
She comes back really strong. Her, I should say, Michael Shannon and Joel Edgerton, all excellent. And Edgerton, he's becoming a chameleon. This guy pops up in different roles. I love him.
Hey, speaking of Michael Shannon, real quick, did you know that he used to work at the Hang Up?
I saw the
You mean the Hangy Uppy?
The Hangy Uppy, yes, which we're right across the street from, pretty much.
That was funny. I saw that in the article.
Yeah. Mm.
My fun fact of Michael Shannon is that Chicago Humanities Festival 2 years ago hosted a play called White Rabbit, Red Rabbit by an Iranian playwright. And part of the play is that the actor, it's a solo show, the actor doesn't get the script until they are on stage and they pull it out of an envelope, a manila envelope on stage in front of the audience, and then they start performing it. So there were 4 actors that were asked to do this. Michael Shannon was one of them, and I was one of them. And so we've never met, but I'm like, well, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, Shannon.
There you go.
That's awesome. A little connection here.
Not to go too far down the Michael Shannon rabbit hole here, but
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Did he get paid for Batman versus Superman? I mean, like his corpse is in it.
I wonder. That's a good question.
You know, I think there was a law ever since who was it? Back to the Future. The dad who was in the first one. What's his name? I need a jaw box for myself here. Crispin Glover.
Crispin Glover. Yes.
And they used his prosthetics from the first movie in the second movie, and they didn't hire him on. And I think since then there's a law or something like that in place in contracts and SAG or something that they can't ever do that again. So he needs to get paid for even if it's just a dummy.
I imagine, though. I mean, it makes sense. You're like, your image is being used for this entire period of time on a multi-million-dollar film.
You know, and I meant to pay attention during the credits, but was he credited like Body of Zod? I mean, best performance ever. He's going to get an Oscar.
Throw it in the jaw box. See if he got a credit in that one.
Sorry, we got way derailed.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Back to Midnight Special. 2 other pros that I wanted to bring up. Another actor I didn't mention in it, Adam Driver, who is appearing in what seems everything nowadays, plays an NSA worker who is tasked with tracking down Alton, but he becomes a believer of Alton, and he really is more on his side, right? And then secondly, the mystery of the story. Again, I touched on in the review, it seems like Hollywood thinks we're all dummies, you know, like we have to be told exactly where the movie's going from point A to point C to point D. Heavens forbid somebody makes a movie that's somewhat open to interpretation. Still, it's got a beautiful narrative to it, but you take away what you get into the movie, and I love that, and we're missing it. So thank you, Jeff Nichols. Get out there, and I'd love to hear what the Jawheads have to see. I know this is opening limited cities this weekend and then growing. It's one of these progressively getting bigger and bigger. So when it comes to your city, look it up, see it, and shoot us a tweet and let us know what you thought.
The guy hasn't made a bad movie, so
yep.
I'm in.
Three Jaws for Midnight Special. No gay characters in the movie, but that is our topic this week.
All right. WTF.
Get on it, Midnight Special.
All right. Now, we are covering this. Matt, you had mentioned that this was somewhat of a difficult list for you to come up with.
Well, I mean, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I just think my picks are probably going to be fairly pedestrian. Some of them will be interesting, but...
when aren't they?
It's a category I haven't seen a lot of.
Right back
of,
at you.
Oh, thanks, Rye.
Yeah.
It's a category I haven't seen a lot of, so...
All right. You're getting started at number five. All right. Hit us with that pedestrian pick.
All right. Here it is, right out of the gate. Let's get this one out of the way. It's absolute fantastic movie. One of my favorite movies. I revisit it once in a while. Philadelphia. Mm. And I think it was especially important because Tom Hanks plays a gay character. He was a lawyer, too. I think so.
Yeah.
He gets fired when his employers find out that not only is he gay, but he has AIDS. And he gets very sick in the movie, and Denzel Washington comes in as his attorney to defend him, which was potential career suicide for him. It was the height of the scare of the, you know, the AIDS epidemic was at its high, and it was a very crazy time in America, I think, especially for gay people. Great movie.
Yeah.
So powerful.
And again, one of those that gave a voice at the right time, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and I mean, I think especially then it was important to see, you know, a mainstream, you know, hetero male icon choose to play a character who, you know, there just wasn't as much acceptance for out gay men to do something like that. So I think it definitely, there was a lot of visibility, and I feel like probably won a GLAAD Media Award or something. I don't remember, but yeah, great movie.
Good. Yeah, I agree.
Good
nice
work.
Pick.
Thank you.
It has to be mentioned when we're doing this list.
Sure.
Fazio, what do you got sitting at number five?
I didn't know it was numbered like 5 to 1.
Oh,
so I'm going to pick one.
Just pick your favorite to be number one. So, you know.
For the Bible Tells Me So, 2007 documentary about religion and homosexuality.
Have never seen it.
Is this the one where they tried to Jesus the gay out of them?
Not quite.
I've seen that one.
That's probably happened also Friday nights on Division Street.
Oh, yeah.
No, this was
except
one of the...
instead of Jesus, it's bullet.
Right.
Yeah.
You can
bullet
never
bourbon.
Bullet out of anything. No. But it's a documentary, and it was one of the first mainstream documentaries that actually talked to families about families who were religious and talked about that the parents and the children and the relationship with the Bible and being gay. The reason it kind of also made a big deal was at the time, the House Majority Leader, Dick Gephardt, they were in the movie. You know, and, you know, I
really,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Interviewed for the movie.
Yeah. So it was the big documentary about LGBTQ issues and religion. It was the first one that came out that made a huge mainstream impact. And, you know, I'm a little biased as well, just because, you know, I produced and worked on a film that came out called Fish Out of Water, which was also kind of dealt with the Bible and homosexuality. But this was a really big thing for gay people because a lot of people were like, well, we can't be gay and be Christian. So that's one of my movies.
One more time, the title?
For the Bible Tells Me So.
I like it. Putting it on my queue.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. Swings it over to my number five. This one came out in 2005. Part comedy, part drama, I guess is the best way to sum it up. It stars Felicity Huffman, Trans America.
Oh, good one.
You like this one?
Good one.
I never watched. What was Felicity Huffman in? Sex in the City? Do I have that right?
Was she in Sex in the City?
Maybe I'm wrong on that. Throw it in the jaw box. That's how little I know Sex in the City. But she was definitely on a television show. But I was very unfamiliar with Felicity Huffman. And in here, she plays Bree, a transgender woman who discovers she actually fathered a son 17 years ago when she was a man. And she gets a call that her son has been arrested and is in jail. Now she's a woman, and she has to travel cross country, pick her son up, and they start to make a road trip basically together. as I mentioned, part comedy, part drama. It really turns into them sort of embarking on this trip that ends up becoming like discovery, you know, for both them. Obviously, we got a teenage kid who's having his own issues and this whole idea of a transgender figure, obviously a parent, and everything that's going on with her life. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's funny, it's sad, it's uplifting, though, at the very end. And Felicity Huffman, spectacular. Nominated for Academy Award for this. Definitely seek it out. Trans America, my number five.
Nicely done. At number four, I have a movie that came out in 2008, and Sean Penn won Best Actor that year for his portrayal of Harvey Milk in the film Milk. Man, oh my God. See, I caught this one. It wasn't on a plane, but I was in a hotel. Just a movie that once you start watching, you get riveted and you can't believe this is a true story. America's first openly gay politician, publicly elected official. It's a tragic story. It's history, so I feel like I'm not spoiling anything to say that ultimately he's assassinated. So sad, but what an important guy, and so many great things he did before he, you know, his untimely demise.
Sure.
And man, Sean Penn knocked it out of the park. Great movie.
Yeah, I think that movie was, for me, kind of came out around the same time that I was coming out. So it kind of sticks in my mind as really powerful. And also, for all the people around me, felt very much like a revolutionary in many ways. You know, I will say the one thing that over the years, as I sort of started thinking about, you know, who I am and what it means to come out, that film, as powerful as it is, and as much as Harvey Milk was an essential figure in our history, I definitely don't agree with "you have to come out." I think that's a phrase that was important for the community he was a part of and what he was doing at the time. But, you know, being somebody who has so many different, you know, whether it's religion or race or all these different identities, I think there can be some complexity that makes it much more difficult to just come out because you must. So in many ways, like, I love that movie, and it changed, you know, a lot of our lives, and it gave us hope again.
Yeah.
But it also gave me a place to say, wait a minute, that is not for everyone.
That's interesting.
It is. And there was that one scene in the movie that really hit me, I remember, was where I think he's talking into the tape recorder there right before the end. And it just struck a chord where he says, you got to give them hope. And I think it was the screenwriter, can't think of his name, throw it in the jaw box, who wrote Milk. He got up there and he more or less said that same thing, that he was inspired by Milk and he gave him hope. But it's that part in that movie where the way he says it and the acting by Penn, it just hit me. You know, like, there's all these people that if they're watching this movie, you know, it's transcending to say that, yes, there's other people out there. This is okay. You know, like, you need that in culture. So it was awesome. Great pick.
Yeah. Do you mean Dustin Lance Black?
Yes, that's who it is. Yes.
Cool.
Answered the Jawbox question. One last that's fine.
Cool to go to YouTube and watch archive footage of Milk, the real guy, mm-hmm. and then compare the performance of Sean Penn.
He was great in that movie.
He nailed it.
He did. Yeah. Fazio, what do you got sitting at number four?
Oh, boy. All right. God, why do I feel like I'm sweating bullets?
That's because you got a whole bullet empty in front
crazy,
of you right
are
there.
Are they crazy hot?
They're crazy hot. I'm going to go with a movie that you may or may not know. It's called Chutney Popcorn, 1999 film, directed by Nisha Ganatra, written also by her. It starred Nisha Ganatra, Jill Hennessy, Sakina Jaffrey, Mother Jaffrey, big names whom now we've seen in lots of other things. Sakina Jaffrey's been on House of Cards, and Nisha Ganatra has been directing for Transparent, has been directing Mr. Robot, doing a lot of great work now. But it is one of the first South Asian American lesbian movies that I remember that I looked to. So, you know, very indie movie. You had a South Asian mother, two South Asian daughters, and one was a lesbian, one wasn't. And the lesbian daughter ends up, you know, she brings her girlfriend around. Nobody's happy about it, obviously. Ends up being the surrogate for her sister. And so that sort of like power that she has by being able to carry her sister's baby brings the entire family together. For me, it's in the lesbian kind of scope of best gay films ever, especially. But also, you just didn't see South Asian characters. And so then this was South Asian lesbian. And now she's like this amazing, Nisha Ganatra is this amazing director and creator in Hollywood.
See, I told you, we got an expert on the, I've never even heard of this movie. And I see a lot of movies. So I got two already I'm putting on my queue here.
Woohoo!
There you go.
Awesome. Swings it over to my number four. And this one came out in 1999. Stars one of your favorite actresses, Matthew.
Oh, do tell.
I'm speaking of Hilary Swank in Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, indeed.
And boy, was this a rough movie to watch. Yeah. I remember seeing this movie, and I was roommates with a guy who was dating another girl, and they actually ended up walking out of the movie. This is something I would never do. I can always stomach any kind of movie. I don't, you know, gruesome, scary, whatever it would be. I'm in it for the long haul. But I remember...
You're a professional,
yeah,
right?
You know what I mean?
You don't screw around.
Right, I'm Ride the Movie Guy.
You're not Ride the Walks Out of Movies guy.
So I remember they're like, oh, we had to leave. How did it end? And I'm like, what? You left? Who leaves out of a movie? You know? But it was that kind of rough film, especially when you go back to 1999. And yeah. Hilary Swank really spoiled Annette Bening's party, because I think Annette Bening, everybody thought she was going to win for American Beauty. Annette Bening had never won an Oscar. Still to this day,
she
not
rain
won an
on
Oscar.
Her parade.
And
she still hasn't has won.
Still has not won. And everybody thought this is going to be Annette Bening's. And who the hell was Hilary Swank back then? This was a complete nobody. She had been the Karate Kid and on
Karate Kid 3.
And on 90210. And I remember seeing the movie, and again, a smaller movie, and I thought, oh my God, this person's amazing.
Devastating.
Yes. I mean, what a performance. Again, hard movie to watch, but it tells the true story of Brandon Tina, who was a transgender girl in Texas. Oh, just...
Probably the worst place to be at the worst time
in
America.
If you haven't seen it, and you can stomach it, I would think most people listening to this are open to all these kind of films. Check it out. Boys Don't Cry.
It's a good
very
one.
Powerful.
Very good
and
one.
Wonderfully, wonderfully acted by Hilary Swank. That was my number four.
And I think that wasn't there part of it that was either, not shot here, but there's some Chicago connection to some part of that movie.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either.
But put it in the jaw box.
We got a jaw box.
Thank you. You made up for that one you stole from me.
Yes.
All right. So that brings us to my number three. And at number three, I have another pedestrian pick, but it's a great movie. Another best actor in this one, Jared Leto, Dallas Buyers Club.
He was awesome in there.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
He was awesome. So awesome, right? In his acceptance speech at the Oscars.
Well, he gave one of the few good ones.
He did. That was an odd year.
Yeah, that was an odd. We were like, why aren't you guys saying anything about the communities you're a part of or, you know, that you're representing? But I think he gave a great speech. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy around the movie because, you know, what is it about, you know, trans representation or representation? And, you know, do you cast an actor or do you cast also authentically? And what does that mean? And I think that movie was great. But then also what's been great since then is it has opened up even a broader conversation for, well, who is out there? Who, if we were to cast that movie again, could there be someone else?
Sure.
He was great. And also, I mean, I have a soft spot for Jared, my so-called life.
I've been a bigger and bigger fan of the guy as the years go on.
Nothing was as good as my so-called
life. If you say so, Fozzie.
It ends there. Great pick. Glad it came up. Swings it over to Fozzie. What do you got sitting there?
Here I go.
Pressure's on.
This documentary was very important. Paris is Burning. I feel really gratified when I get the bell sound.
It's like Pavlov's dogs. Yes.
All I want to do is make you happy so I can get that. So Paris is Burning was a documentary in 1990, a very famous gay film about queer drag culture in the 90s and how, you know, and drag culture wasn't necessarily done by people who, you know, it wasn't like an elite act. It was something that was, you know, a sense of power. You know, before RuPaul's Drag Race, people were doing this as a form of expression in nightclubs and in private spaces. And what I love about it, and it was directed by Jenny Livingston, actually filmed mid to late 1980s. I'll read you a little blurb. It chronicles the ball culture of New York City and the African-American, Latino, gay, and transgender communities involved in it. Some critics consider the film to be an invaluable documentary of the end of the golden age of New York City drag balls and a thoughtful exploration of race, class, gender, and sexuality in America. And so things like this drag, the drag culture stuff was actually also a way for people of color and kind of people across the queer spectrum, the LGBTQ spectrum, to have purpose and feel empowered. And what it reminded me of, I went to Sundance this year just, you know, to go, and I saw a film there called Kiki. It was a feature documentary film by Sarah Jordano and Twiggy Pucci Garcon. And that is a film. Kiki is the people of color and people who use Vogue as a form of expression and empowerment, and often queer people of color, queer and trans people of color. So it just reminded me of how, as much as time has evolved, we're still finding these really beautiful forms of expression for people like the youth and LGBTQ people of color.
Love it. Yeah. Paris is burning. Yeah. 3 for 3. I got on my queue already.
I'm a big documentary fan, so that one definitely on my list.
Swings it over to my number 3. I have spoken about this movie once, maybe twice on Cinemajaw in the past, but it's a wonderful film, and I would just feel awful if I left it off my list.
Okay.
I'm speaking of the 2010 film that starred Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer, Beginners.
Huh.
Christopher Plummer actually won the Academy Award for playing a gay man who actually did not come out until after his wife passed away. Ewan McGregor plays his son, who is...
He's an octogenarian too, right? He's Christopher Plummer. He's an old guy.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, he's older, and that's what makes the film... again, this is one of these sort of like comedy dramas, uplifting type films where Christopher Plummer comes out after his wife died. Ewan McGregor plays his son, and obviously the shock to him. And then he sort of gets these flashbacks of remembering when he was growing up, sort of the problems that his mom and dad had, because at the time it wouldn't have been open for Christopher Plummer to be a gay man. So he more or less went along with what was going on, and that was get married, have children, even though he was living this second life, you know? And yeah. So once his wife passed, times have changed. He felt like he'd come out. Now he's this older guy and he's coming out. So that's where the comedy somewhat comes in, because it's funny that he's having these, you know, other people come over, and, you know, there's some humor involved there. But also it's all about like marking the times. He Ewan McGregor many times in voiceover says, this is what happiness looked like in 1999. And they got like a still photo really quick. And they use this same type of narration throughout the film. And I think that's what the movie is ultimately about too, is that time changes and people's opinions change, social opinions change. And so I think that's, we're getting to the point where at that time, you know, his dad could come out and be happy before, you know, he ultimately would pass away.
Yeah.
So awesome movie if you haven't seen it. Christopher Plummer, obviously Academy Award winner, and Ewan McGregor's in there. Spectacular. So
cool.
Yeah. Beginners. That's my number 3.
All right. At number 2, I actually had Boys Don't Cry, but I'll sub one out. This one is probably at the top of a lot of people's lists. 1996 film. I left it off my list because I felt like we've talked about it quite a bit. The Birdcage.
Mm.
Although I don't think we've talked about it in a while. I think the last time we did maybe was when we did remakes, because it is a remake of an old French movie, La Cage aux Folies. And I hope I'm saying my French is terrible, but
I'm also an expert in French.
Really?
And gayness.
We got to do French gay films.
Yes. Fair enough. Next time.
Nathan Lane and Robin Williams, arguably at their peak. Definitely Nathan Lane at his peak. Robin Williams would go on to do a lot better stuff. I really like this movie. One that I revisit quite often.
So I feel like my job in our triangle, our movie list top 5 triangle, is to insert all of these movies that you may or may not have seen.
That's good.
And, yeah, that is good.
Listeners listening to this love that kind of stuff. So
well, and I'm sort of,
because everyone's seen The Birdcage. I'm not bringing anything new to the table.
But that's such a good movie. So I'm a little torn, but you know what? Since I am South Asian and I'm bringing all the brown, I'm going to go with My Beautiful Laundrette. 1985 British film. And
I like it already.
Right. Done. I'll read you a little bit. It's a 1985 British comedy drama directed by Stephen Frears from a screenplay by a very famous guy named Hanif Qureshi. It's set in London during the contemporary Thatcher era. Part of it, the reason I think the Thatcher era is mentioned, is that you have a South Asian man and a kind of like a punkish British guy off the street, almost like the guy from Grease Lightning, you know, that kind of guy. And they fall in love. But there's a lot of, you know, I mean, in England, the relationship, it's to the South Asian community, it's, you know, it's similar to the way, you know, the Mexican immigrants are treated in the United States. Mm-hmm. During this film, they kind of deal with the like racism between white and South Asian and Asian communities. These guys have this laundromat, and it's the laundrette, you know, it's a love story that kind of unfolds.
Oh, I see what you did there. Well done.
In this laundromat. It's and you know, the guys, you know, I love the description. It's like the Umar, a young Pakistani man living in London, has his reunion and eventual romance with his old friend, a street punk named Johnny. Of course, right? The two become the caretakers and business managers of a laundrette originally owned by Umar's uncle Peter. The plot addresses several polemical issues of the time, including homosexuality and racism, depicted within the climate of England and Thatcherism at the time.
Awesome. Yeah. 4 for 4. My queue is filling up. This is awesome.
I feel very happy. I'm down with the brown.
I like that she's picking these smaller films that people may not have heard of, because it allows us to
and
get
I'm
some
a,
heavy ones.
I'm a sucker for 80s British films, especially if there's a street punk in it.
My number two, most people obviously have heard of. I don't know if enough people have seen it still to this day, but it's a heavy hitter. I got it number two. Could be anybody's number one, but I'm putting it in number two. Came out in 2005.
That's your prerogative,
yes. Rye. Absolutely beautiful love story, first and foremost. I am speaking of Brokeback Mountain.
I knew it. It was either 50 Most Beautiful or Brokeback Mountain. I knew what you were going with.
You got Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal, directed by Ang Lee, who would go on to win the Best Director Award. But
did not win Best Picture.
Did not win Best Picture.
Got robbed.
And I don't know who should feel worse, the jury who let O.J. Simpson go or the Academy Award members who voted crash over Brokeback Mountain because they didn't have the balls. Come on, guys. They screwed up.
They really
did. Flat out screwed up. I remember going to see this movie. It was obviously a big deal. And I'm glad it was a big deal. It was trying to get people to go see it that normally wouldn't go see it. And I go see everything. I have no qualms about seeing any movie about anything. So for me, I'm going to see it if I hear it's getting good reviews. And at that time, we weren't even doing CinemaJaw. So I just went along, saw the movie. Was so touched. I think what it did that other films of this nature didn't quite do was express the love story so strongly that if you bought into the love story like I did, you really then understood sort of the pain and suffering of the gay community, in the sense that they can't even talk about the one person they love the most, you know? Mm-hmm. Imagine being absolutely in love with your wife, Heather, and not being able to ever tell anybody that you love this person. The heartbreak, you know?
Sorry, Heather.
Sorry, Heather.
And I think, you know, what's really lovely, and I think what was really important about that movie is that there was so much nonverbal communication.
Oh, 100%.
And you had sort of these very macho, very, you know, masculine guys and men. And I think
they were
that
cowboys.
Was important. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that defied what many mainstream audiences thought of as somebody who could be gay, somebody who could define themselves as, you know, homosexual. It's like, what? But he's really cool and tough. Oh.
Right.
And it opened some eyes.
Yes. And you mentioned about the nonverbal. I actually have written in my notes, one of the last scenes is when Enos, played by Heath Ledger, goes to Jake Gyllenhaal's parents. It is one of the most moving moments. There is so much said in the scene and so few words spoken, and it's just heartbreaking. Everybody loves, because Matt talks comic books here a lot on the show, so everybody loves Heath Ledger's Joker. To this day, I still think his performance in Brokeback Mountain is better than his performance as the Joker. Go out there and see it.
That's a tall order.
But it's right up there. He was nominated Academy Award. I wanted to see him win it then. Wonderful performance. Heartbreaking. So
he won the Academy Award for the Joker, though.
Yeah, I know. But check out Brokeback.
All right.
All right.
Rest in peace.
Yes.
We'll give that one to you.
That's my number two. I still got one better, Matt.
And number one, a movie that just came out last year. So many reasons this movie is notable. It was shot on the iPhone. It's got this kinetic, nonstop pace. It's almost like plays out a bit like a chase movie. Delves into some parts of the transgender community that I don't think have been delved into before on the big screen. Creative in so many ways. Tangerine.
Somebody had to say it. That's true.
This movie, I don't think, is getting enough attention. We've been singing its praises. We had one of the producers on, Darren Dean, like, what was that, like 5 months ago, six months ago?
Throw that in the jaw box.
Somewhere back there. Man, we're filling up that jaw box. Whew, poor Elias.
My jaw is tired.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Fair enough. One of the actor, I say actor for all of us, but one of the actors won, I can't remember,
Spirit Award.
Yeah.
And that was the first time a trans person has ever won, I believe, like a best actor in
Any type of major award.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable that it hasn't happened before, but yeah, I mean, amazing stuff.
Yeah, and it's also commendable because, Fazia, you were mentioning how a lot of these films don't cast people from the community. Tangerine did right by casting mostly people from the transgender community as their main actors, and to their credit, the performances were amazing.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like another a film that is so empowering to, you know, whether it's trans people, people of color, you know, people across the spectrum saying our stories matter.
Yeah.
And people will watch our stories and we deserve to be heard and seen. But I thought it was such a good movie.
Yeah, I can't stress enough.
Couldn't
funny, too.
Yes. So funny.
Funny, crazy.
I was joking. I love the cab driver in that movie. I want to see that guy do so much more work. I was laughing constantly.
I can make a joke there, too.
Yeah.
He was good.
He was. All right, we swing it over to Fazia. Your number one pick. Did you narrow it down?
I didn't know the room I was coming into, but I felt like I needed to bring the brown. So my number one pick is Fire. All right, they're all looking at me.
Never heard of
all
it.
All looking at me. Fire is a 1996 film by Deepa Mehta, and it was part of a trilogy that later that came out: Fire, Earth, Water. Fire was the first film.
Okay, I've seen I think two of them. I have not seen Fire.
So that was the oldest, but in many ways it was the first lesbian South Asian film made in South Asia. And it starred one of my favorite actresses, Shabana Azmi, who was known in India and Bollywood. I mean, she's one of the most famous, most important Bollywood actresses and art house film actresses. But she got so much flack because she would do these very art films or indie films that broke barriers, that broke boundaries. And so in this movie, essentially, you know, it's a story about, you know, the multifamily living system, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone's living together, the servants, and then also there's a woman who's married into a family. The husband, his brother also lives there with his wife. Both the brothers, one is decided to be celibate, and so he's not having sex with his wife. And then the other brother didn't really want to marry his wife, so he's still having an affair with this not South Asian, but a Chinese woman. So essentially, you have left these two women who are beautiful, young, they're in the home, and you know their energy and their sexual energy is turned towards each other. Fire. But
sultry.
But it is, especially being, you know, South Asian, but it's a classic lesbian love story. And in a culture where, you know, South Asian culture, we do have a history of trans community and gay community, but we just don't necessarily talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so this is such a much more common occurrence than people realize. And this movie, you know, kind of brought it to the surface.
Yeah, I jumped into the series, as you mentioned it, as you started to describe it. One of them was nominated, I think, for Best Foreign Film. Maybe it was like the last one, Water.
Oh, I think maybe it was Water. And I feel
and
like...
And then I jumped into it at that point because I didn't even know. It was more I watched the movie and then I was like reading about it. I'm like, oh, it's a trilogy. I got to watch all these movies. So
yeah, you got to watch the elements.
I got to see the original. Yeah, love it. Swings it over to my number one. And you want to talk about a soundbite, we can use this one. For my number one, I'm going lesbian as well. This one came out in 2013. Just a heartbreaking story. And I think this is one of those where it transcends the idea that it has anything to do even with the gay community. And just anybody can see and grieve with these characters on screen. I'm speaking of Blue is the Warmest Color.
I was wondering if this would come up.
And here was a movie where you got two lesbians. Well, one, when the film starts out, Adele, she's just a French teenager who's still in like sort of discovery mode. And she comes across this blue-haired painter girl who all of a sudden she's sort of excited about and, of course, finally starts a love affair with, which would turn into a relationship. And I think where I was going with that was being non-gay, heterosexual, you can watch this movie and feel the heartbreak at the end between the relationship because it's a very long movie. I want to say the runtime on this is 3 hours or right thereabouts. So through this whole time, you really get to know this couple. And I know the movie was talked about a lot because it had this very long lesbian scene in the movie. And some people thought, oh, is that appropriate.
Gratuitous or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I felt it did its job perfectly. And I think it did it, if you went and saw it in the theater, it really did its job because it made you a little uncomfortable and then you opened up to it as well. I don't know if that sort of makes sense. Like, obviously, if you're sitting there with like 20 strangers and the scene is going on for 15 minutes long, there's a little uncomfortableness with.
Sure.
It's like, oh, boy, I don't know what's going on. And then after a while, you start to realize how beautiful the scene is and that lovemaking between two people who love each other is a beautiful thing. You know, it's not kidding around. As Woody Allen said, don't knock masturbation. It's having sex with someone I love. It's wonderful.
No arguments here.
It's wonderful to see on the screen. And eventually the story, like I say, really becomes this wonderful love story where at the end, when it doesn't work out, not giving too much spoiler away, it is just heartbreaking. I remember like just tearing up in the theater. I think as far as love goes and falling out of love, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, probably my number one. And my number two, believe it or not, Blue is the Warmest Color. It just broke my heart watching it. I remember just, felt so bad.
That's a good topic we need to cover, falling out of love movies.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
We'll all be crying and we'll have Kleenex.
And whiskey.
Yes.
You know, I did love that movie. And, you know, part of it is you are seeing these just like young and it's awkward and it's coming of age and it's French. And we and you know it is very intimate and you do see those little moments where people are annoyed and confused and sad and it's so, it really tugs at you and it is, I mean, I cried, I cried a lot, you know. For me, I'm like, you know, the love scene, you know, it's beautiful and the female form is beautiful, but I felt like the love scene was still to me like a little bit from a guy directing it and saying, I want you to do this, versus what maybe two women might do. But I don't know. I'm not the expert.
Wait a minute. Hey. What?
They told us you were an expert.
Brown is the most expert color.
All right. That was our picks. I did have one honorable mention that was not mentioned that came out just last year, and that is Carol, which was a wonderful film that I had thought, well, if anybody doubled up on one of mine, I would throw out Carol. Excellent film, too. Again, at that time period where being gay in a lesbian relationship was thought to be actually psychotic. So it was interesting take, and you got Cate Blanchett, one of the best actresses working today. So
no doubt.
Excellent. Any honorables for you?
I have one honorable, which is Imitation Game.
And
I have
good,
to be...
Good call. Gosh, I forgot about that movie.
This would have been on my list, but I got to be completely honest, I still haven't caught up with it. The only reason I'm throwing it out as an honorable... I know, that's a rule. You can't mention a film if you haven't seen it, but I think it's important, and I'm very familiar with the real story of Alan Turing, so I feel like I can bring this up as an honorable mention.
Right. That's still...
It's on my list.
Oh, boy.
I'll be
catching up. You guys, I'm seeing what's happening here. It's getting ugly. There's a lot of fisticuffs.
Yes.
Oh, you have no idea. Boy, 7 years of this.
Yes. Fazio, did you have any honorable mentions before we go to break? Throw out one.
Look, The Danish Girl I thought was lovely.
Sure.
New movie. We don't have to talk about it, but it was beautiful, very important, and also dealing with, you know, getting operation from transitioning and one of the first operations. I think that was important. There's also a film called Go Fish from 1994 that was directed by Rose Trochet, written by Rose Trochet and Guinevere Turner, and it was based in Chicago. And the reason it's a very important movie was it was one of the lesbian films of the era that really talked about lesbian popular culture and relationship in a very, very specific, gritty way, not made for men in any way, not a mainstream movie at all, changed all of their careers, and they're all doing amazing things now.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have trivia. Matt Kay versus Fazia in Melissa McCarthy movie trivia, plus a cinema war looking at which Disney cartoon should be made into a live-action film next.
We are really scraping the bottom of that barrel,
oh,
man.
Oh, we are. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all
Cinema Jaw is brought to you by K&N Replacement Air Filters. Hey, we know you're probably listening to this in your car right now. Chances are good. So get a K&N Replacement Air Filter. They're designed to increase horsepower, provide excellent engine protection, and last for the life of your car, truck, or motorcycle. Go to knfilters.com/podcast and get a great deal on a K&N replacement air filter with free shipping And as a bonus, you will also get a free K&N hat. You can't beat it. And by...
Here at My Job Hunter, we want you to do what you love and love what you do. No matter if you're still a student or working in admin, tech, manufacturing, catering, travel, finance, or healthcare, we can find you your next big career move. Our service edits and optimizes your CV, cover letter, LinkedIn profile, and applies for 20 job positions for you. Wherever you are, whatever you do, do what you love and love what you do. Check us out at www.myjobhunter.co.uk.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out with Fazia Mirza. I wanted to ask you, too, before we get to trivia and before we get to Cinema War, when you're working with Eugene Park, and he's been a fellow guest, so I wanted to bring this up. This guy loves film. And I think when you're working on independent films, and much the community here in Chicago is, you probably come across that all the time. Do you think that we have a wonderful community in Chicago, or do you think it could get stronger?
Well, I think we have a great independent filmmaking community in Chicago, and I think there's actually a lot of opportunity here. You know, I mean, one of the great things is people are hungry. They're hungry in a different way, where if you say, hey, I have this opportunity, do you want to show up and let's make something? I think someone will be, people are often like, wait, what? Like, here? We don't have to go anywhere? We can do it here? Like, yeah, we have all the talent. We have all the equipment. We have all the expertise. It's just a matter of choosing to do it. So, I mean, could it get stronger? Sure. I mean, I think in terms of people sort of feeling empowered that they can tell stories, that we have everything here. I mean, one of the things that I love about creating content is when it comes time to cast. I know any number of stand-up comics, improvisers, theater actors, film actors who are not seen enough and who are funny and talented and who deserve screen time. So they're hungry to perform. And you know what else is great is you can get a location in Chicago.
Oh yeah.
For free. And that's amazing. But people, it's really exciting to folks. And I think we as makers have to remember that and get in that mindset and recognize the power of making stuff. And it doesn't always have to be perfect. Sometimes it's important to make something and put it out there and get to the next thing.
Sure.
Agreed.
So for the listeners that want to follow along, Fazia, what is your Twitter handle?
T-H-E-F-A-W-Z, the Faz.
Wonderful.
Do it.
Matt, we threw a few items into the jaw box.
Did we? Just a few?
Just a few.
A couple.
He's probably stuffed down there. Let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box!
Oh, what's in the box?
What is going on, guys? I am working on my looks here, trying to... it's dark in here. It really is. So you guys let me know how I look. You know,
terrible. Get back in there.
Yeah.
Well,
frightening.
Got a couple questions here. So
pale and ugly.
Okay, so when was Eugene on? We keep talking about him. He was on episode 204. Unfortunately, I wasn't there that whole month. I went a whole month without, and then I saw him on the episode afterwards, and I was like, dang it, I would have wanted to meet this guy. You guys did the fall movie preview for 2014.
Hmm. He is a baby, so
yeah,
it takes up his time now.
Yeah. Let's see. Did Michael Shannon's carcass get credit for Zog? Todd? Well, on IMDb, yes. So that's all I got.
No kidding. All right.
Okay. Wow.
Let's see. Was Felicity Huffman on Sex and the City? No, but she was on Desperate Housewives and Frasier.
Close enough.
See, I don't know my television. I'm Rye the movie guy. I'm not Rye the TV guy. I never claimed to be, so.
Was there a connection with Boys Don't Cry or a scene in Chicago? I didn't find anything specific to that.
Sigh.
And what episode was Darren Dean on? He was on 248. We did Best Diner Scenes.
Ah, because there were a lot of great diner scenes in Tangerine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, what a fun one that is.
Yep.
And wouldn't it be great to do like a Guy Fieri meets diner scenes episode? No, that sounds terrible.
Actually, that sounds okay.
Could be
Diners, Dinins, and Dives on screen.
Love it. Was that everything it was?
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah, we should do that episode, and I'll tell you guys how to make prison mac and cheese with a with a paper bag and an iron.
God,
that I have in the jaw box here.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, get back in that jaw box.
All right.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this. Me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Fazia, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner. Ooh. And tell the jawheads at home who she thinks won this Cinema War. Very important, because we're fighting for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. A lot of cartoons being made into live-action films. Heck, Elias, tell the jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic: turning Disney cartoons into live-action feature films is hot right now. So which classic Disney cartoon should get the live-action treatment next? Pinocchio or Dumbo? Matt, you'll be fighting for Pinocchio. Rye, you'll be fighting for Dumbo. Let this live-action cinema war begin.
Rye, the tale of Pinocchio dates back hundreds of years, 1883 to be precise, and has a grand tradition of oral storytelling behind it. So take your flying elephant and stuff it.
As soon as I started doing research for this, it became very clear I would win this war.
Oh, man.
Disney already has greenlit a Dumbo live-action movie and are planning for Tim Burton to direct it. If you can make a movie about a boy and a tiger on a boat in the life of Pi, then why not a flying elephant?
For visual effects alone, Pinocchio for the win. You have fairy godmothers, talking crickets, whales, and of course the growing nose. What have you got in Dumbo? A flying elephant. Big deal.
Oh, you dummy, Matt. Dumbo is a better story here. And if you say otherwise, you're nothing but a big fat liar. What they are doing with CGI animals these days is nothing short of remarkable. So from a special effects angle, Dumbo is the big winner.
Yeah, right. Pinocchio is a more relatable story. Everyone wants to be a little bit more than they are. An actor's life for me. Nobody wants to eat peanuts with their nose. Someday, Rye, someday you'll be a real little boy.
Come on, Matthew. Ask yourself, which one of these stories would be better as a live-action adaptation? Clearly, the idea of seeing a giant elephant flying, it trumps seeing a wood puppet get a stiffy.
I'm just going to leave that one alone. All right, Rye, you want to know? I've thought about it. I can see it now. Harrison Ford as Geppetto, Michael Fassbender as Pinocchio, and Rye the Movie Guy as Jiminy Cricket. Box office gold.
Oh, man. Matt, talking animals always wins out. And the moral of the story with Dumbo being different but special is a tale that will always resonate with audiences. Pass me some peanuts. I want to see Dumbo come to life. Plus, we've seen Pinocchio live-action film already. It's called Roxanne.
Wow.
We are button heads here.
It's a totally different story, by the way.
We are button heads here on Cinema War. We throw it to Fazia. What did you think of this Cinema War?
Okay, I need a clarification, first of all.
Sure.
Okay, when it comes to Dumbo, Dumbo was in the circus, right?
Correct.
Did he ever get out of the circus?
Yeah.
He does.
He goes on a journey, yeah.
Yeah, so he's not stuck in the circus at the end.
No, I think he joins the circus happily at the end.
It's been so long, I can't even remember. And that's why we need a live-action
Dumbo. He was a baby. He was a baby who was floppy ears, and they didn't... He was a, you know, sort of different...
Orphaned, if you will.
They rejected him from the circus, and then he comes back as a flying elephant. Now he has an act.
The key here is flying elephant.
Here's what I'm going to say. The thing is I agree with you, Rye, that I would love to see a beautiful elephant fly in the air, and I think it would look great. And I loved Life of Pi, and I loved seeing that tiger lion animal, it was a tiger, come to life, and all the CGI effects. And however, I don't know if I really at this point in time want an elephant to be happy to go back to the zoo. I don't know if that's the message I really want to send American elephants or American children, or actually any elephants or children around the world, or adults, or adult sure. children.
Or just anybody.
Or anybody. Now, that being said, I love the Roxanne Pinocchio comparison. I've never thought about it, but I was just as disturbed by Steve Martin's nose as I was by Pinocchio's. However, if I have to choose between happiness for animals at zoos versus wooden puppet becoming a boy, I'm going to have to go with a wooden puppet.
Yes!
Becoming a boy.
It's a win for Matt Kay, and it's about time.
Yeah,
I think
sure
you had
is.
Like three or four in a row.
I was rolling there for a while.
Well done.
It earns you 20 seconds of jaw time. Here's to rant and rave on whatever you want.
Here's my 20 seconds. Rye the Movie Guy And I don't want to give a plug for a major corporation here, but you need to get Netflix already. You got Prime, fine. But you're Rye the Movie Guy. Get Netflix, you cheapskate.
Wow.
20 seconds. Boom.
There you go.
I'm offering my password and username to Rye the Movie Guy.
This is awesome. We got to have more guests like Fazia, right?
See how generous she is?
She comes in with whiskey and Netflix codes.
And pop chips.
Yes. All right, Matt, it brings us to trivia. Everyone's favorite segment. Because Melissa McCarthy has a new film coming out entitled The Boss, we are playing Melissa McCarthy movie trivia. Fazia, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get hung up on a question, you get one trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez has clues to all the questions.
All right. Well, I am going to let the gentleman go first.
Okay.
Question number one over to Matt Kay. Matt, in 2013, Melissa McCarthy starred in The Heat alongside this actress.
That was your favorite. Oh, my God. See, this is what I do. Having a total brain fart. Sandra Bullock.
One to nothing, Matt Kay. Question two over to Fazia. Also in 2013, Melissa McCarthy starred in Identity Thief alongside this actor.
I just want to say I'm terrible at this game, and I don't remember anything. I don't even remember who these people are I'm sitting with. Jaw somebody. An actor, was it Geppetto?
Incorrect. Good guess, though. Quality guess.
It was Geppetto.
Yes. Yeah. Matt, you got a chance for a steal and to take a 2-0
lead. I'm sorry, Fazia. I know this one. I'm pretty sure it was Jason Bateman.
Wow. Matt K up 2-0. I'm not happy. Come on, Fazia. Question three over to Matt. In 2011, Melissa McCarthy was a bridesmaid in the film Bridesmaids.
Hmm.
But what actress played the bride-to-be Helen in the film?
Still haven't seen it. Kristen Wiig?
Fazia, you got a chance for a steal.
I truly have the worst memory, and I know her face. I see her. She does the little tiny hands thing. She's amazingly brilliant. I'm trying to look at anybody to tell me the answer with their eyes. It rhymes with...
could be a famous reindeer.
Reindeer. Rudolph. Maya Rudolph.
Oh, all right.
We'll give that one to her. She's on the board. She is on the board.
Get her on the
2
board.
To 1. All
Gotta
right.
Break the ice.
Yes. 2-1. And actually, question 4 is over to Fazia. She can tie it up right here, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, Melissa McCarthy, Naomi Watts, and Bill Murray starred in a film together. What was the name of it?
Raising Arizona.
Oh, wow. Came out of the box hot on that one. Woo. Incorrect, though. Matt, you got
one more
a chance
time with
for
that
a steal.
Cast.
Melissa McCarthy, mm-hmm. Naomi Watts,
yep.
Mr. Bill Murray.
And this was 2014?
Yes. Name the film.
Hot to Trot. 2.
Wow. Wow. No. We were looking for St. Vincent. St. Vincent.
So close.
Yes. Still 2-1, Matt Kay. Question 5 is
you know
over
who's
to
not him. Looking for St. Vincent? The general movie-going audience.
Matt, also in 2014, Melissa McCarthy starred in a film where Susan Sarandon played her grandma. What was the name of that movie?
I believe that was Tammy?
If you missed that after we all mentioned Tammy when we did the Eye for an Eye, I would have been upset.
Yeah.
3-1, Matt Kay. We need perfect here, Fazia.
All right, Brandon.
Remember, you do have a lifeline, so
I
remember.
Have a lifeline.
All right. Melissa McCarthy's first movie appearance was way back in 1999 in a movie that starred Jay Moore, Katie Holmes, and Sarah Polley. Name it.
Chutney Popcorn.
Incorrect.
It was 1999, though.
Was it? Matt, you got a chance for a steal here. This was her first appearance on the big screen. 1999, mm-hmm. The cast included Jay Moore, mm-hmm. Katie Holmes, and Sarah Polley.
That doesn't help me at all. I'll go ahead and use my ER.
Whoa!
This is a steal, too.
A trip to the ER on question number 6. Elias Rodriguez, what was the name of that 1999 movie?
Your clue is, pass this and you get $200.
Pass this and you get $200?
That's what I said.
Go.
It's Go. I saw that in the theaters, too.
Wonderful film.
Taye Diggs was in that movie.
Taye Diggs also.
I saw it with Taye Diggs' brother, half-brother.
Who did Melissa McCarthy?
So Melissa McCarthy plays just a small role, but
Jay Moore's wife.
No, Jay Moore and Scott Wolf, who was in Party of Five. They were actually, see how this all comes together. They're actually a gay couple in the movie, and they go to a guy that was cheating on both them, I guess. They were both having, quote unquote, an affair with this guy, and they go to the door, and Melissa McCarthy plays this guy's sister and answers the door. It has a good like 5 to 10 minute scene. That's it. It's just one scene with her. That was her big break.
Yeah. I actually saw that in the theaters, which is weird.
No, it's a great movie. Yeah. I actually really like it.
Still 3-1. 2 questions left, so Fazia needs them both to tie it up. Matt,
okay.
Name the director who worked with Melissa McCarthy 3 times, directing her in Spy, mm-hmm. Bridesmaids, and The Heat.
I hate the director question, man. Francis Ford Coppola.
All right.
No? Well, that's
absolutely correct. No, obviously wrong.
It was Stanley Kubrick.
Well, we still got a chance for a steal. Fazia, the director of Spy, Bridesmaids, and The Heat.
Is this somebody I know?
I'm not sure.
Can I use my
Yes. She is using her on question number 7, Elias Rodriguez. What's the name of that director?
Your clue is, take away the E in his last name, and you have a word for a soft pear-shaped fruit with sweet dark flesh and many small seeds eaten fresh or dried.
Why is the word fresh used so many times in that clue?
I love that
flesh
clue.
And
flesh and fresh?
Yeah.
Wait, so basically you're saying his name is...
You're trying to... Oh.
No, I thought you gave me that image.
Yeah. Did, yeah.
Yeah, so if you take the E out of his name,
yeah,
it spells a word that is for that fruit.
Pomplamoose, pomegranate. That wasn't my answer. I was thinking out loud.
Give her one more guess.
All right. Give it to her.
All right, we're looking for Paul Feig. I believe that's how you saw it.
Fig?
So if it would have been Fig, yeah. That's what we're looking for.
That's a tough one.
That was tough.
It's a terrible clue.
Well, yeah, I agree, Elias. Jeez.
Come on, I don't write these things.
Too much time in the jaw box. Wow, it is 3-1. Last
Take
question
away
of the game.
E? Wait a second. Fig isn't spelled with an E.
It's F-E-I-G.
But
his
I thought it was at the end. The E was at the end. That's why I was...
I know, tricky. I mean, hey, blame Elias. Blame Elias.
God,
question
Elias.
8. Last question. Over to Matt.
I guess so.
No, it's actually over
it's
to
mine.
Fazia.
Okay,
no, it's
okay,
to Fazia.
We haven't started.
Sorry, yes, here we go. Last question. Fazia, in 2012, just off her success of Bridesmaids, Melissa McCarthy appeared in This Is 40, in which Paul Rudd and this actress play a married couple turning 40. Name her.
Steve Carell.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. That was actually incorrect. Matt, do you even have a guess?
I do. Wait a second now.
It's the eye of the tiger.
Is that a hint?
No, I'm just giving you pump-up music.
Oh, I see. All right.
It was working for me. I was all into it.
I'm
running up the stairs in my mind, like Rocky.
Paul Rudd and who?
Paul Rudd.
40.
Yeah. Something man. Her name is...
Holy to moly.
Miss Man.
Well, not anymore. Miss Apatow, actually.
Yeah, yes. Leslie Mann.
Come on, I had her last name. Jeopardy,
so
that would have counted.
So close.
Well, you said Miss Man. So
that's her maiden name, Miss
Man.
But
now she's Mrs. Apatow.
Oh, you were saying Ms. I thought you were saying Ms. Man, like that's the whole last name.
No.
I
couldn't remember her first name. What was it again?
No,
Melissa. Leslie Mann.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That might have counted, sort of.
It would totally count in Jeopardy.
Well, not
Can
on
we
this.
Call
not
Alex
on this.
Trebek?
I'm the only judge here, Matthew. 3-1.
I'll get you, Trebek.
Let's get a handshake. Well done.
Well done, Fazia.
Now, we have a case it does come down to a tie, and this does happen. We call it a jawbreaker here. This question would have been over to Fazia. Favorite McCarthy, Jenny McCarthy or Melissa McCarthy?
Ooh, great question. Great question, Rye. How complicated can I get with this answer?
Well, this is a jawbreaker, so.
And I have to choose one. Well, Jenny McCarthy, a beautiful woman who was weird and funny on television, breaking the rules for what beautiful women were allowed to do on television, even though it was for like that weird show on MTV. Melissa McCarthy, also a rule breaker. I'm going to say they get married and have a baby, and so their baby is who I pick.
That's Gotta the right go answer. With it.
There was no doubt. That was the only right answer, amazingly.
You had that written down in your notes, right?
I actually do. It's shockingly. Perfect. Yes.
Jalissa McCarthy. Jalissa McCarthy.
I even had the name written down.
That's absolutely amazing. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Naomi Watts, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
In real life?
Yep.
Yeah. Naomi Watts. Okay. I think she's older than me. I would say she is 44.
Elias, lock him in at 44. Fazio, what do you got?
I'm going to go with, if this is the Price is Right rules, I'm going to go with 45.
Give that to Fazio. 47 for Naomi Watts.
Woo.
Wow.
She's looking great.
She looks fantastic for 47.
Fantastic.
You know, I do these all the time and I pull up the ages. This was one of those, I had to double check that I had the age right. I'm like, what? 47? Wow.
Hey, you know, real quick, I know you hate Jennifer Aniston, but Jesus, is she not the Dick Clark of our generation? That woman is not aging at all. She looks like she just walked off the set of Friends, for Christ's sake. I saw her on a commercial, and I know there's digital retouching and stuff, but she's aging really well.
No, I think you're right, and I think that's probably, that should be on a t-shirt.
the Dick Clark of our generation. And it's just Jennifer Aniston's face. I love it.
Jennifer, you can use that for your Twitter bio.
Oh, boy. So much fun doing the jaw.
Indeed.
But it does bring us to the end of a great one.
Yeah.
Yes. First and foremost, we got to thank our guest. Fazia, this has been awesome. Thanks for coming on Cinema Jaw.
Thank you so much for having me. Y'all are great. You're crazy hot, too.
We've been told before.
Hey, and best of luck with Signature Move. We're going to be following along and keeping updates for all the listeners.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
We also got to thank the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you, guys. And L.A. Jawheads, the short film I worked on, I wrote and direct, and Ride the Movie Guy co-produced, Think Twice, is having its world premiere in L.A. at the L.A. Independent Film Awards, April 16th and 17th. I will be there. Come have a drink. Follow all the information on facebook.com/thinktwicefilm.
We also got to thank the sponsors.
Thanks to all the sponsors, and thanks to the Chicago Podcast Co-op. You can check them out at thechicagopodcastcoop.com.
Jawheads, if you like this episode of Cinema Jaw, please subscribe to us on iTunes. If you already subscribed to us on iTunes, leave us a review. All the reviews help attract new listeners.
And while you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/cinemajaw. Give us a like and go to feedback at cinemajaw.com and let us know your feedback.
There's too many things to plug, you know? Hey, guess what, guys? You're on Instagram. We know you are. Check us out there, too, at Cinemajaw.
We're even at Cinemajaw on Twitter. Heck, we're at CinemaJaw everywhere on social media. Whew, it's been a blast, Matt.
Yes.
Until next week, I'm Ry the Movie Guy.
Matt Kay.
And keep on jawing about the movies.